Welcome to the Quarantine Book Club, a comedy and book club podcast where we read some of the best
and worst
speculative fiction out there.
I'm Bob, a career theater technician and educator.
And I'm Rance, an English writing and literature teacher.
We might not know everything about these books,
but we'll damn well try.
And we're happy you can join us this week.
Make sure to visit us at www.thequarantinebookclub.com.
And check us out wherever you listen to great podcasts.
But I mean, if you want to play with light colors, you can. If you want to play,
I can play with light colors all night. Doesn't matter. I can play with light colors and still record.
Look, we have a podcast to do, and if you want to play with light colors, that's a problem that people can't see, but you can. But hey, your personal comfort is way more important than, you know?
Yes, it is.
Hey.
Hey.
I'm Rance.
I'm Bob.
And it's the Quarantine Book Club.
That it is.
And you're in a new place of residence.
I'm a homeowning boy who owns homes.
I'm really proud of you.
Thanks, man. I'm proud of me, too. It only took me 44 years to become a functional adult.
Wait, why? But is buying a home the thing that, like, dictates whether you're an adult?
Sure.
Okay. Adulthood sucks. That.
It does.
Adulthood
Being
sucks.
A homeowner is shitty. You know what else is really shitty? Owning a fucking home.
Mm-hmm.
It sucks. Let me tell you, for the people who used to own my home, you know, don't listen to this podcast, so you don't fucking know. But if anybody knows the people that owned my home before me, fucking tell them they fucking suck. They didn't know how to build anything. They didn't know how to do home repairs. I had the garbage disposal go up on me. Already. And that includes, so I disconnected it to like, so I could like repair it.
Yeah.
Not realizing that unlike in other houses, the dishwasher is connected to it. So Tara went to run dishes tonight and we flooded the kitchen floor.
Yep. That's actually the same with mine too. It's got like the water goes through the dishwashing line. Yeah,
into the garbage disposal. I don't understand why.
Well, that's so that way, if when you're washing your dishes, you can just eject chewed up garbage into your fresh dishes.
It's actually backed up into the line.
Mm.
Like there's disgusting old food gunk in this clear hose.
I really don't like garbage disposals. I think they're a necessity that we sort of have to, well, we've gotten used to, but I really hate them because of all the stupid maintenance and how grotesque they are. You pull one of those hoses off, it's like looking into somebody's diarrhea butt.
It is. It smells. And the thing is, I haven't had a garbage disposal for like the past 4 years. I think this might actually be the first garbage disposal I may have ever had in a home. And I was really psyched about it, and now I'm really annoyed about it.
I'm sorry.
Oh, that's cool.
About
the dryer, that came with the house, the nice dryer. It doesn't stop. It doesn't stop. So my beautiful fiance Tara ran her clothing for 3 hours in the dryer the other day before she realized it was still running. And I'm pretty sure that like a bunch of her work clothes shrank.
Well. You know, dryers are, let's just go back and hang clothes on a line.
That'd be cool if I realized that's what I was going to have to do. I would have done it.
I'm always afraid, though, if I do that. I've always wanted to, like, occasionally go cottagecore and, like, hang up clothes on a line. But I'm afraid that, like, they'll get bugs and shit in them.
Oh, yeah. That's horrifying. Bugs in my clothes. Also, are you, like, a tiny houseman? Do you want to live in a tiny house?
No, I have absolutely no desire to live in a tiny house. I want the bigger house I can get.
Yeah, I don't know why people don't just call them fucking campers, because that's all tiny houses are. Like, they're like, hey, I'm converting this bus into a tiny house.
So that's a camper.
That's a camper.
And so a yurt is just a tent.
Yes.
With a stove in it. That's all a yurt is.
And there's some cool looking tiny houses, but I need more. Moving into a house where I feel like there's maybe about 10 square feet less than my previous home, I'm feeling real cramped and having a lot of first world problems.
Well, this is where you just have to like trash all of your stuff that you hold dear.
I have been. I've thrown out so much crap. And I was like, do I need this? Do I want this? No, I don't.
Just throw desks, out the kids. Throw out the kids.
Oh, I'm trying. I'm trying.
Yeah, throw them out. Put them in the garbage disposal.
It doesn't work, so I can't.
Oh, okay. Well.
Fucking failure.
Well, that's it. That's an absolute shame, and I'm sorry you can't get rid of that.
Yeah. Apparently, some people were very, this past week, people were, I think, like, sort of offended that I didn't like the Renaissance Festival.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you know what? Oh, well. Guess what? We haven't been to a Renaissance Festival in 2.5 years. You know why? Pandemics. So, yeah. You know, if you enjoy the Renaissance Festival, then go to it. But if you don't like it, then don't. But you also have a you also have a podcast, so you're allowed to talk about this stuff.
I need to talk about this stuff.
This is your platform.
It's my bread and butter. This is how I make my living.
That's right.
Just talking about the Renaissance Festivals.
Yep.
Talking shit about Renaissance Festivals.
You know what I hate about Renaissance Festivals? Let me tell you what I hate. Is
it when people call them the fair? I want to listen to it. I want to hear this.
Okay, I am in for all of the cutesy little activities when I go. But one, it's always super hot. I want to go on a rainy day. If I go to a Renaissance Festival, I want to go on a rainy day. Okay. Two, but it's always fucking hot and I'm done, man. I'm out in the heat. The only way that I can be out in the heat is if I am doing some kind of physical work, which you well know. I and my wife knows it. I will work out in the heat without a problem because I have a purpose and a reason to be out in the heat. I was outside today chainsawing wood in my front yard, like for 3 hours. It was like 100 degrees today and I'm fine. Why? Because I'm an adult. I can take care of my body. I drink a ton of water. I'm fine. But I don't like going to do fun stuff in the heat. Why? Because I can do fun stuff in my house and it's cool.
Yeah. Environmental control.
Yes. So why would I choose to do fun stuff in the heat when I can do it when it's cool? The exception, camping. Why? I can leave. I can leave whenever I want to from a campsite. The Ren Festival Fair, whatever the hell it's called, you're like dug in. You're like, it's like going to an amusement park. You're like in the middle of this place. It's hard to get out. You just want to eat your turkey leg and have like a beer. But there's other people doing it. You got to wait for your old woman. Like I'm talking about my mom because I always went with mom. You got to wait for like to meet up with your mom or something like that. And she wants to go see a show somewhere and smoke a cigarette in a really awkward place. But the other reason I don't my big problem, I want to do all the fun stuff. This turned into a big rant. I want to do all the fun stuff. Like I want to make the wax hands, but the wax hands fall apart before I get home.
Yeah.
And then I like tactile things. Like I like playing with wax. So the wax hand, the minute it gets dented, I have to just keep denting it. It's this compulsion that I have, like, and I want to begin peeling it apart. But it's this thing that you paid like $20 for.
I mean, and that's the worst is that you could just fucking do that at your house for less.
Put my hand just get a bunch boiling of fucking candles. Wax.
Yeah, no, it's not a big deal, man. There's specific waxes you can buy for that are like body safe waxes. It's the same stuff that people put on that, like when they're like, "Yo, I'm into wax, hot wax. It's my kink." Like that's the same wax that you're dipping your hand into at the restaurant.
Is it really?
Yeah.
So it's like kink wax.
Yeah.
Can you put your weenus in it?
Of course.
So cool.
The only thing you got to do is make sure that it doesn't go in the hole.
Right. Well, you just put a little Band-Aid on that, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You just put a little Band-Aid.
This is how you safely put your wiener in wax. You put a Band-Aid over the tip of it. This is the Quarantine Book Club talking about wax kink. And let me tell you, if you want to do that, you just put a Band-Aid over the end of your wiener.
Yeah.
And then you want to put a rubber band around your scrotum.
Okay.
Double it up so it's really tight so your scrotum turns bright purple. And then you dip that in and then you put your hot dog in there. And it's a fun time.
What? Wait, what hot dog is in like your body, your man hot dog?
No, just a hot dog.
Your body hot dog?
No, just a hot dog.
Wait, but where's the hot dog come into this? Like, you put it in the wax thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not talking about actual, like, body parts. That's dangerous.
Do you have to put a frozen hot dog in there, though? Or, like, a flaccid? Yeah,
you put the frozen hot dog in so that it thaws out when it gets into the wax.
Could I put a bratwurst in there?
Yes, that's sexy. Mm. Only if it's pre-cooked, though. You can't no raw bratwurst.
No, because you got to scrub that thing out when you're done. I cannot deal with raw meat, baby.
Exactly.
This boy doesn't truck with raw meat.
No. I mean, I'll have like medium rare meat.
Yeah.
But no raw meat. That's gross.
Now, you know what? I love those guys who like wear, you know, they're red like MAGA hat guys who are like, the kind of meat I love, just wipe its ass, set it on the grill for a minute, and put it on the plate or whatever they say. There's always some derivative of wipe its ass as though that's the most important thing to do with a cow. One, you ever see a cow's butt? Two.
No, don't do this.
Wipe its ass, breathe on it, and put it on a plate. What I was going to say, though, okay, let me go back to the Renaissance Festival really quick.
Yeah, sorry, we got sidetracked.
No, it's fine. We should have all actually gone to the Renaissance Festival. They should have continued to have it during COVID. Do you want to know why?
Why?
It would be the most historically accurate experience they've ever had because there was a pandemic.
The plague.
So it's like you can go and you can have fun, but maybe you'll get a disease.
No, that sounds awesome. Also, just because that way maybe everybody that goes to the Renaissance Fair will get a cold. Just get a cold. Just a cold.
I was about to go...
What do you think I was going to say? Some nasty mean thing? Like, sometimes people get colds.
You're right.
It's fine. Look, I'm not a mean guy. I'm not a nasty guy. I don't hate people.
You're one of the sweetest people I know.
I am. Why don't you fuck off? That's how sweet I am.
How was your week?
Man, it was moving, building. It was fine. I hurt really bad afterwards. I'm pretty well recovered now, though. I'm good. I'm back to work. I moved into a house. Good for me. Hooray.
Congratulations.
Fucking grown up. What about you?
it was a strange week, but the most exciting thing happened the past 2 days.
Okay.
So I went outside yesterday. It actually is connected to the chainsawing thing. So we have this big tree in our front yard. It's the only tree we have on our property. And it's just gotten overgrown. Like, you ever drive down a street and you see trees, you're like, that's just an overgrown tree.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, I got this chainsaw. I'm going to cut these pieces off. So I go ham on this bitch, right?
Right, right.
And I'm also like, I'm going to cut these pieces down. I'm going to put them in my little like fire pit. It's going to be great. I am moving a branch, and I hear, boop, 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 boop. And I'm like, what the fuck is that? And I move some leaves, and I see this baby bird on the ground, mouth open, hopping on the ground, going boop 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 boop, like looking at me with its mouth open, like what the fuck. So I immediately felt terrible, and I found pieces of like busted nest around this.
You destroyed that. That baby bird homeless.
But here's the deal. So I picked it up in my glove and I brought it inside the house, and I looked at my wife and I was like, I don't know what to do. So
you touched that baby bird, you murdered it.
Well, no, it's fine. Apparently that's not a real thing. Birds don't sense by smell. Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool.
And I have confirmation of that now, and I'll tell you why in a minute.
Okay.
So I get this box, I get a cardboard box, and I put the baby bird inside of it, and then I put a washcloth in there. And my wife looks up online, and apparently, this is the weird part, you can feed nestlings hard-boiled eggs.
But you got to think it's cannibals.
Well, no. It's not like throwing a hamburger at a cow and saying, "Now you're cannibals."
You're cannibal.
It's like, imagine sharks eating fish. Sharks have to eat fish.
Okay, yeah, because they're carnivores.
Right, but also they're fish and fish, right?
Yeah.
But wait,
yeah.
Sharks are mammals, aren't they? Never mind. No. Anyway,
no. Who told you sharks are mammals?
Whales are mammals, right?
Right. Sharks are fish, bro.
But why is a whale a mammal?
Because it's got hair.
Look, I'm going to need somebody out there who's versed in biology. to help me? Is a shark a mammal?
No.
Are sharks
fish?
Are sharks cold-blooded?
A shark has gills. That's what makes a shark a fish. A whale does not have gills. A whale has a blowhole.
I think that's a bullshit explanation, but I'm just going to accept it. I'm looking it up right now. I can't.
Oh, Google. Man. Cool.
Is a shark a mammal?
No.
No.
Idiot.
Okay. No, sharks are not mammals. Bob is right. Anyway.
Wait, this is elementary school. I don't bullshit, fuck,
look, I'm not a science boy. I don't do science things. Okay?
I'm an author, but I don't do science things.
No, I'm not talking about that. I researched that, but I'm not writing the next shark book. I'm not writing fucking Jaws 2.
You should write Jaws.
I'm not writing Jaws the Return, the Snaps. I'm not writing Jaws the Big Bite. Jaws Bites the Big Apple.
How many Jaws licensed novels do you think?
I bet there's a lot, actually. I'm gonna submit to an anthology and just be like, this is the story about sharks as mammals, please. that's gonna be my job.
You know what the best Jaws movie is?
Which one?
Deep Blue Sea.
I like Deep Blue Sea a lot. A lot. No, especially when that shark just jumps up and consumes Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah.
Which is a lot like best. Matthew McConaughey leaping into the mouth of the dragon in like Rain of Fire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I put this baby bird inside of this box with a washcloth and I put it under the tree. Not with the intent of doing anything other than like maybe
like Christmas.
Yeah.
It's a present bird for Christmas.
It's a present for when the cat's going to wander by. Right. So then I go back over and I start cutting the because I was like, I give it some hard boiled egg and it like, have you ever fed a baby bird? It's the craziest thing. It doesn't bite. It just swallows. I put it in there and its mouth is open and there's like this little valve at the back of its throat that just takes it in. So then I'm cutting more wood and I hear and I find another one.
Oh no.
So I put it in the box. The minute I put it in the box, the two of them come together and cuddle.
Oh no, you're killing me, dude.
Okay. So I then go over and I check to make sure there are no other baby birds. And these baby birds have feathers. They're almost ready to fly. They're so close. And then you're taking a picture of something, and I don't know what. And you're more invested in your cat.
I'm trying to TikTok while you're.
You're more invested in your cat and your TikTok than you are my story.
You're in the whole thing now.
I'm sorry.
I'm just trying to promote our podcast I can as the best promote boy. Wow. And I was listening to your story. Nobody was going to know, but then you told the whole world. My cat ran away.
I'm sorry.
So he got upset. He can't even hear you when he's upset. Well,
I'm upset at him. Anyway, I'm not done yet.
Okay.
So then I think to myself.
So you put them together and they cuddled.
Anxiety took over. And I was like, if I just leave this box outside of my house, some dumb fucking like neighborhood cat's going to come and rip them apart.
Right.
So I take the box and I put it up and wedge it between two branches of this tree.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, okay, if a day goes by and nothing has changed, then I'm going to call like a wildlife rehab place. Well, sure enough, yesterday afternoon, Mommy Robin starts flying around and is feeding the baby birds in the box.
Nice.
Like I've created a new nest.
Okay.
And she's every time I go next to the box, she like flies around my head and she's like, bip, 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 bip. She's like, I recognize you did a nice thing, but also I'm going to take care of my babies.
Cool. It's raining right now. That box is wet.
Don't worry. I'm not done my story yet.
Okay.
So I come home today. I'm driving. I got home earlier than I thought, and I'm racing against the wind and the darkness of the coming storm cloud. And I get home, and the box is starting to get buffeted by rain. So I grab the box, and I put it underneath my awning, underneath like a plastic shovel. And I go back inside and I come back outside after the storm goes away and I wedge the box and Mommy Robin is right above where it was, literally like squeaking at me like, you brought them back. Like it was like she knew that I was taking care of these birds.
Well, good for you. You're an altruistic kind of guy.
Wow, I expected to hear like a lot more fanfare than that. Thanks, man.
Well, you've got the sound effects, so play some.
I did this for your praise. I wanted your praise,
bro. I was sincere. I'm fucking very proud of you.
I'm gonna go just rip the box down. Fine, it's fine,
dude.
I would never do that.
You save some birds. Like,
I would never do that.
I love animals of all different types. I'm just sincerely glad that you helped those birds. I'm sure that you feel really good about it.
I brought them tonight when I came home and it was raining outside. I brought them up into the bedroom. I had the box. I brought it in the house and I walk up to the bedroom and look at Katie and go, what do I do with these wild birds? And she's like, what the fuck are you doing?
Don't bring them outside.
She's like, put them outside. And I was like, but it's raining. And she's like, put them on the stoop or something. What are you, some fucking idiot? Like, are you some
birds
kind of moron?
Rained on all the fucking time.
She's like, you're disrupting the natural order. I was like, but this box, what if it gets blown over? I like have a rock in there to weigh it down. And the only thing I can imagine is this box falling over and this rock falling on both these baby birds. Like, I don't know. This thing is the source of the anxiety in my life right now. Are these two baby fucking birds?
You know what the worst part is? Like, that if you go out there tomorrow and they're not there, you're going to fucking cry. You're just going to start crying.
I will. I'm going to go check them after the podcast.
Good. You've got to tweet about it. Tweet to everyone that the birds are okay.
They
won't know what it means until Wednesday, but that's fine. Who cares?
The birds are okay. Buddy, really quick, I need to ask you a specific question.
Okay.
And I want to know what it is that you're drinking.
One, two, three.
It's time to drink.
Cool. What are you drinking, bud?
I am drinking a Truly Fruit Punch today. I'm going simple.
Oh, you got the fruit punch.
Yeah. I've had it. It's grown on me. I didn't like it at first. And it's gotten a little kinder to my palate. So cool. Cheers. What are you having?
Cheers. I'm drinking a Corona Premier.
That has actually become one of my favorite, like, just chill out beers, is in the can in particular.
I would rather have a stockier beer.
A Laser Snake?
Yeah. Sure. I'm out of Laser Snake right now, though.
Did you say you'd like to have a stockier beer?
Yeah.
Like a Brunner Battle Hammer beer?
Bro, I would love a Brunner Battle Hammer beer, but don't give me any of that fucking stout. Look, okay, here's the thing we're going to talk about, people, right now. Assholes who love Guinness, who are like, I would drink a stout, and that's my fiance as well. Don't give me that dark beer crap. It tastes like mud. I don't want a beer that tastes like coffee. I want a beer that tastes like beer. Thank you. Dark beer is a bad beer. It's the wrong choice. Get out of my face with it. I'll fight you.
It's a bad beer.
At me. A lot of people are like, don't at me about it. Fucking at me. I want to know. I want to know which of you assholes out there like dark beer. Because guess what? I'll just fucking tell you you're wrong. That's the only reply I'll give to you on social media. Yeah. I'll just say you're fucking wrong. Hey, Twitterverse, this is going to be a clip. Twitterverse, guess what? TikTokverse, whatever. See, I'll even leave that in. Dear TikTok, tell me about what beer you like, and I'll tell you you're wrong.
Why do stouts? Okay, it's the ones that taste like peanut butter.
They're like, just all gross.
Why would you want to drink peanut butter or oatmeal?
I want a beer.
Dude, I want to drink me an oatmeal milk stout. Like, every kind of stout has, you feel the noise of the word in the back of your throat. Peanut butter, oatmeal milk stout.
And yeah, don't come at me with that shit. Look, and I'm as fucking European as they come. We're from fucking England and Scotland and the whatever those fucking and what, Sweden, is that our other fucking Dutch whatever,
shout out T-Stapes.
Yeah. So like, it's not like all those people that are like, I'm Scottish, I like a stout, whatever, fuck off, dude. So am I. Like, just eat shit and drink a beer.
Eat shit and drink a beer. That is the new motto for the Quarantine Book Club.
Eat shit and
drink a beer. What's the thing about the book? It's just eat shit and drink a beer.
Excuse me.
I think I might actually change that. I think I might change the occasional drink section theme to eat shit and drink a beer.
Cool. I like it. I'm a fan of it.
So we'll enjoy your Corona while we talk tonight. And tonight we're talking about...
We Sold Our Souls by Grady Hendrix.
You know what that means? You know what I get to do now?
Yeah, I do. You're excited about it.
I am. Here we go.
Hey, do you think you want to talk about the book that we read? Okay.
That is still my favorite sound clip, by the way. I think about that, okay, every day of my life. I wake up in the morning and occasionally just go, okay.
And that's how I feel about a lot of things in my life. That clip is just, it's a true to life reenactment of the way I feel about a lot of things in this world.
Is it the way you feel about a lot of things in this book? Okay.
Yeah. Hey, everybody, just before we even get into talking about the book, it's just okay. It's cool.
It's a book I read.
It's so middle of the road. If you're looking for 5 stars, this is a straight up 2.5.
Whoa, you're gonna say 2.5 on this baby?
It's half a 5.
Well, I'm not gonna go that harsh. But like I think I'm actually excited to talk about this book. Normally it takes us about an hour to get to the book section and then we fart on it for about 10 minutes. But I really wanted to jump into this tonight because I have a lot to say and that I feel about this book, and I know you do too. So I think we can develop a pretty good conversation. This is the warning I'm going to put out there right now, that if you have not read We Sold Our Souls by Grady Hendrix, and the audiobook version is narrated by Carol Monda, which is actually, to my knowledge, currently free on Audible. If you have Audible,
cool.
I didn't get it. It's I enjoyed the audiobook version a great deal.
I'm not telling you not to go listen to it. Yeah. If you want to listen to it in regards to being able to listen along to the episode, stop the episode, go listen to the book. It'll take you about 9 hours. Listen to it on 1.2. Yep. It doesn't change anything. Listen to it a little fast. It's fine. Some of our regular listeners have sent me messages this week saying that they enjoyed it. They were glad that we picked the book.
Burgers, I know our friend Burgers, shout out Burgers, had read it, and he had actually read it in like the first 3 days. Yeah. And said that he was excited to hear what it was that we had to say about it.
Yeah. Moose sent me a text and said, so shout out to Moose, sent me a text and was like, I'm glad that you guys picked this book. I'm interested in hearing what you have to say about it also.
Cool.
And again, there is nothing in the level of like, there's not that level of hatred that we had for last episode's book. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that Grady Hendrix is a piece of shit.
Update. I got the Kindle version of Weird Disappearances, and it sure as hell has the Fiverr thing right on the Kindle cover.
Are you serious?
Yep. Steve, absolutely. Steve Curry. Come on, man.
Are you?
Steve,
what the fuck are you doing, bro?
Steve, you want to reach out to me, man? I'll talk to you all about like how that stuff works, buddy. If you want to just send me a quick, like, I'll be out, bro.
Do you think that he forgot to take, that he used the wrong file, or do you think he stole it because he couldn't afford it?
Actually, what I think happened is I think they made it. Mm-hmm. And he paid, and then he lost the file, like couldn't find it in his email, and then it was like, well, fuck, they have it up on their Fiverr as like a display, like here's one of the covers I did, and didn't realize that it would still have the watermark.
Who would put that up on their Fiverr? Like, do you need some hot Photoshop content? Check out this book cover I did. Everything is clearly Photoshopped.
Look, if you actually want some fun, you have to take some time and look at some of the book cover services online. As someone who has been, you know, who is about to literally publish and self-publish, like I'm very grateful that I had some good connections that I was able to pay for a really good artist for my cover. But there are some people, and I don't think there's anything wrong with this, some indie authors who literally can go on for like $25 and some person has got like stock, they got a bunch of stock photos, stock backgrounds, stock text. They'll just like make your cover and they won't look terrible. They'll just look exactly like you expect like a young adult cover to look right now. Like if you can imagine, if your book is about an assassin, it's going to be like a lady wearing a hood with like a knife next to her thigh, purple smoke in the background, and like the words like Thorn of Bones or something above her head, right? Like, it's going to every book in the world looks
did
like
you
that.
Just create the newest hot young adult sensation, Thorn of Bones.
Thorn of Bones. I think there would need to be an and in there. Thorn of Bones and Regret.
Like, how do you make a thorn out of bone? Is it bone thorn? I don't.
It's a thorn of bones. You have to read the whole book to figure it out.
Oh, okay, cool. Maybe it's a ship.
It's Maybe. By it's by J.M. Hoskins is the name of the author. J.M. Okay. Hoskins, Thorn of Bones and so Regret.
Everyone, just keep an eye out later this summer. New release.
J.M. Hoskins, Thorn of Bones.
J.M. Hoskins, Thorn of Bones and Regret.
A young girl. A young girl torn away from the life she used to live, thrust into dire circumstances.
Do you think we could write this young adult novel in about 2 weeks?
If we can get an algorithm to just write it for us. So can we, do you think we could hire someone to ghostwrite a quarantine book club special? Thorn of Bone. But
then we have to make another podcast review the book. I'm about it. I think we could write a book together in like, I think we could do it like two
it's
weeks.
Probably
gonna, we have to a solid 100 pages, but 100 pages with really big letters.
But you realize that just like any other idea we have, we're going to work on it for about 4 days and then just get bored and play Mortal Kombat, right?
That's fine. That's fine.
Thorn
and
of
that's
Bones.
That's all Thorn of Bones and Regret is. Like, so the books should be like book one is Thorn of Bones. It's Thorn of Bones, the series. Book
yes.
one is Thorn of Bones and Regret.
Right.
Book two is Thorn of Bones and
Sorrow.
Calamity. Yeah, oh, Sorrow. Calamity. Okay,
and then the third is Thorn of Bones and Calamity.
Yeah.
Yeah. Could they be part of a series called like the I don't know, like the
Winds of the West.
Oh, the Winds of the West trilogy. Book yeah. one, Thorn of Bones and Regret. Mm-hmm. I really like this idea. Well, guys, it was really nice to be able to spend this time with you on the Quarantine Book Club podcast.
I hope somebody steals this fucking idea.
Here's what I would like to do.
Shows up on Fiverr tomorrow.
Here's what I would like to do for you. And this is a joke that I think would expand out to something we do every year. I think without writing it, we should do an episode on Thorn of Bones and Regret. Like, okay, this book doesn't exist, but we just do the episode anyway.
My thought was, we should put it up on Twitter and decide that there's going to be 12 chapters mm-hmm. and we let people name the chapters. So then we have to write the chapters
Perfect.
Based on those names.
Perfect. So we're going to give a synopsis. The book will never mm-hmm. exist, right? We're going to give a synopsis and have people name the chapters. I've loved this. This we can do. This
yeah,
we can
cool.
do.
This is a very special episode of Perfect. Quarantine Book Club coming soon to Thorn you. Of, a Thorn of Bones.
I might even try. I might even
regret.
Like. I might even. I might even get somebody on Fiverr for like $10 to do the cover.
Only if you leave the watermark on it.
Good idea. Thank you for that idea, Steve Curry. So we read. We Sold Our Souls by Grady Hendrix. So let's jump mm-hmm. into this thing, man.
Yeah, man. Chris.
Chris Pulaski is our protagonist,
a former heavy metal guitar player who works at a hotel, and now people come to her hotel and piss at her, and that's how your book opens.
It's a great opening for
fine.
A book.
No, I mean, yeah, it actually is fine. Like, here's the thing: the book. There's nothing. I don't know, man. Okay, this book, and I said this to you this week. This book reminds me of a combination of Queen of the Damned and Immaculate Void, except that I don't think it does any of those things as solidly as those other two books do. And I know you were like, it's been forever since I read Queen of the Damned. I don't even remember what it's about.
I never read it.
You didn't read it?
No, I never wow. read it. I was never actually a big Anne Rice fan.
I was a super goth teen, man. Of course I read all those Anne Rice books. And then she turned Christian and started writing books about Jesus and then went, there's no money in this.
And
went
so
back to write vampires.
It would have been so cool if Lestat showed up in like her last Jesus book.
Mm-hmm.
And like
Jesus, it's like Jesus, Thorn of Bones, Regret. Book one.
I'm just going to put the crucifixion on the front of this book.
Fiver it.
Oh, look, I'm going to need you to write a book. It's called Thorn Bones, but I got to have Jesus on the cover.
Wearing a hood and also, like, with the knife in his hand.
By A.R. Ice.
Yeah, I forget who the actual author was of the previous Thorn Bones.
I'll scroll back when I have to do a clip later.
So... our protagonist, Chris Pulaski. Yes, she's a 47-year-old.
Is that how old she is? Because yeah. I didn't even notice how old she was.
Former guitarist of this band called Dirtwork, which dirt is spelled D-U-R-T-W-U-R-K with umlauts over the U's.
Not having read any of the book, just audiobooked it, I didn't know. I knew the umlauts were there because they mentioned it specifically. Yeah. I didn't know that it was spelled like
Dirtwork. Which is funny because there is a metal band that I couldn't help but think about it the entire time. There's a metal band called Soilwork. Mm-hmm. That, I mean, they're fine, like whatever, but I was like, is this supposed to be like a Soilwork reference? It's not.
Is Soilwork the same thing as Dirtwork? Is it in reference to being a gravedigger?
I don't know. It's a great question. I presume so, because I didn't, until they mentioned that specific thing, I was like, what the, it's just like dirty work, like dirty jobs. Where's Mike Rowe going to be with his libertarian policies?
Bounce, 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 bounce. Let's get some Faith No More up in here to hang out with Dirtwork. That's a name that I expected to be dropped during this book. And wasn't. I expected, because if you got a motherfucker out there that loves obscure metal type music, they're always going to drop a Faith No More reference, and it didn't pop up, and so I'm surprised.
Just coming
from a Faith No More fan.
That's one of the things that the book sort of, that's where that book actually lost me a little bit. I think Grady Hendrix did really, he has said himself in interviews, he was like, I don't really know shit about metal.
I knew it. I could tell. That was something I was going to come back to later.
What made you realize that he might not have known or had too much of like an honest footing in metal?
It was some of the things that he said about quote, the metal lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And that's I'm air quoting that. Cause yes. It's like,
it's not going to exist. If your personality is metal, get out of here.
Yeah, I mean, and that's it. Like, there's certain levels of, like, when you're talking about metal, he's talking a lot about, I think, hair metal.
Yes.
And he's talking about, you know, you're not living with, like, there's one character that's into what I would consider to be fucking metal, and that's JD.
Oh, you know what? And you know what? Of any character in this book, just throw JD in the trash. I told you by text there was a moment in the book, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's the minute this fucking character gets introduced, and the book goes to me from being like marginally serious to being not even like an attempted satire at metal stuff, just dumb. JD was a dumb character, and I from the beginning, from the moment he appeared, he was an excuse of convenience to explain some of the plot in this book, or some of like the mechanics of the supernatural in this book. And I just fucking hated him. Like, he was every stereotype. And I'm a guy who I came from, like, I loved death metal and black metal, super into the metal scene when I was a kid. And while I was never in a band, I was heavy into black and death metal. Grindcore and all these others that are mentioned in it. And he is the epitome of every, I'm trying to think the right way to put it, like, poser ass metal fan, which I was, I think, in my own regard too, but he just sucks. And he's like on the, I don't know. I have problems with JD. So we'll get to him in a little bit. Mm-hmm. The thing that actually hurt the book for me was JD.
You know, it's funny, man. Like, I didn't mind JD because I was already so enveloped in this feeling that it was insincere as far as what metal was, and that it didn't quite understand. And that's not me busting on Grady Hendrix's idea of metal. It's just that I could tell that this was a person who wasn't overly invested in the quote metal lifestyle. So by the time I'd gotten to that point in the book, I think that the credibility was already shot for me, so I just didn't really fucking care. And I kept thinking about Burger's last episode with the fucking Viking helmet.
Well, that was when we meet this friend, JD. He's in his basement, and he's not introduced until halfway through the book.
Yeah, it's like over halfway through the book, yeah.
One of my actual biggest issues with the novel in terms of how it's laid out is that there's a lot in it that I think Grady Hendrix could have easily breadcrumbed early that he doesn't. Especially there's these clever – every chapter is named after a metal song, right? Like Rain in Blood and Power Slave, which are cool references. But there's also these interludes between each chapter that are like radio – interviews with dirt work throughout their history. There's a character at one point that Chris, when the problem arises, that she's like, I know, I'm going to go and ask for help from an old friend. And she just drives to this guy's house in the middle of like Kansas or whatever the fuck it is. And they're like, and that's when they introduce who, you've never heard this person at all. He just shows the fuck up and he knows.
They mention him once, but they don't talk about him.
Yes.
They don't explain him in background reference to the band, except for the fact that he was their original drummer that got kicked out.
That was it. And so she's like, I know somebody who hates this, the antagonist, quote unquote antagonist, more
as
than
much
I
as I do. Yeah.
So you find out that, there's all this conspiracy around dirt work. Chris has had this wash up life. They used to go on tours. Her bandmate Scotty Rocket and Tuck, is that a Tuck?
Yeah, Tuck. Is Scotty Rocket his real name or a stage name?
I don't know, but they always call him Scotty Rocket.
They call and it's not just like it's rarely just Scotty. It's Scotty Rocket.
Yeah.
And it's got to be a fake name. Like even though they never say it, it's got to be a fake name. Like it's his stage name.
The instigating event is that Chris goes, she starts seeing these billboards for this band called Coffin, and Coffin is led by Terry, who used to be in their band.
The Blind King.
And Terry is sold, he's sold so hard out. Like he's got like, there's like Blind King sodas. Of course, the authentic metal people are going to be mad at somebody selling it because he went new metal or whatever it was. Like there's a lot of this.
Yeah. They're so mad at Korn and Limp Bizkit. Yeah.
New metal's for posers, dude.
Oh my God. That is said so many times in one sequence in the book. And that like this one dude's just like fucking new metal. It was Scotty Rocket, right?
Scotty Rocket. He's like, fuck new metal. Why can't we do anything with dragons in it?
Yeah, I mean, that. Don't get me wrong, that's pretty fucking awesome. Like, fuck nu metal, also. Fuck butt rock. But also, you know what? Who cares? It's just all music. Just fucking listen to what you like.
There's some stuff in this, though, where it leans a little too hard into those stereotypes of, like, metal is life, right?
Yeah.
Like, this one, they talk about, like, songs. So there's this album called Troglodyte that is referenced over and over, which Chris, our protagonist, has written and that is like shuffled into obscurity before dirt work falls apart and Coffin explodes. It says this is an actual like line from the book. Every song was the same song. These were songs for people who were scared to open their mailboxes, whose phone call never brought good news. These were songs for people standing at the crossroads waiting for the bus, people who bounced between debt collectors and dollar stores, collection agencies and housing offices, family court and emergency rooms waiting for a check that never came, waiting for a court date, waiting for a call back, waiting for a break, crushed beneath the wheel. Like, I don't know. I've never thought so profoundly about music and who it's for in my life. And I actually don't think anyone thinks of that unless you're an author writing about what you think is metal.
I mean, I don't know. I think that there were times perhaps where we in our own former band incarnation thought about those things a little bit. We're like, yeah, this is for everybody. The system fucks because fuck the system. We're badass. We'll never sell out. Dude, if you had ever fucking shown me a record contract, I would have sold out in a fucking second.
Instantaneously. I would have coughed into the shit out of that record contract.
Yeah, seriously.
So there's this instigating event where Chris sees this billboard and she's like, oh my God, I got to go talk to the band members and see if they know that like coughing's coming back around and that Terry, the guy who fucked us, is like doing this farewell tour. And she just watches this. She just watches, spoiler alert, as Scotty Rocket just blows his own brains out in his, in his basement
that he's locked himself in because he's a conspiracy theorist who there's something wrong and he knows something's wrong, but he also doesn't understand what's wrong. And so he's basically ordered, he keeps telling Chris that basically Terry has ordered him, has brainwashed him and ordered him to kill Chris. And the only way he can get out of it is to kill himself. So he does. And then UPS guys show up and murder the rest of Scotty Rocket's family while Chris like is hiding in the closet.
So these are like Terry, his like henchmen, right?
Yeah. And they're later on in this story, we find out that the UPS people are very much involved in this conspiracy, that they are the, so everybody in the band hates Chris because of what they refer to as contract night. The night that they basically all sold their career to Terry and all of their rights to dirt work for a huge chunk of money, basically. Chris shuffled them all out of their collective house like that they were renting.
Their drug-induced super.
In a drug-induced super, and she crashed.
Yeah.
Avoiding a UPS truck, we find out later on. But then we also introduce these UPS drivers later in the story, and they only talk in UPS lingo, like the package is delivered, sign here. It's not ever explained what their tie-in is to Terry.
So, okay. So this is where we have to talk about the rules of the world, because
there aren't any.
Well, they're
there.
That's
my problem.
But they're subtle, and I don't think they're explained well.
I don't think they're explained enough to like even matter.
But okay. So let me give you my theory. And it is, I'm not saying this is a positive of the book. I actually agree. I think there's a problem with the way that the world is built, because there's actually a lot of cool stuff that is on the cusp of cosmic horror, but it's like an orgasm that you just never get to.
He's just edging the whole
book. Entire book. I mean, we're talking the very beginning. We introduced this idea of Black Iron Mountain is below the world. It's living in the whole of the world, and everything comes from Black Iron Mountain. And you're like, oh, is this some like dark and evil presence at the heart of the world that's like cosmically going to take over everything? No, it's literally a fucking metaphor.
Or is it? But is it? Is it? We don't know. We don't fucking know. You know why? Because Grady Hendrix doesn't tell us what the fuck Black Iron Mountain is. He also... Okay. Look. The title of the book...
Yeah.
...tells you what you should need to know about the book, which is, we sold our souls. You find out that, yes, apparently... Well, they didn't sell their souls. Terry convinced them to sell their souls. Like, no, they did, because they signed the paperwork.
Yeah.
But... A soul is like a physical thing, and Black Iron Mountain is a bunch of creatures that eat souls. But what is the actual consequence of letting someone eat your soul? That is explained.
Do you remember that?
Because no, yeah. I don't.
So it's explained when Chris meets JD and JD info dumps. I don't have a problem with an info dump in a book, but Chris walks down to the basement of this guy who she hasn't talked to in 20 years, and he literally just info dumps like, "Oh, you guys sold your souls through Terry, and how you know is because all of a sudden you're no longer creative, and those things that you loved, like, you just continue grinding under the wheel day by day." And it's supposed to suggest that, like, the minute that you begin losing your passion, your creativity, your desire to make things, that is indication that you've sold your soul. You're being satisfied by materialistic desires. And Chris realizes, well, shit, I haven't touched my guitar in 6 years. I haven't written a song. Shit, Is my soul gone? I don't know. And that's, I think, where the UPS driver thing comes in handy, because they are they're emblematic of this materialistic presence. Like, they have no desires other than just they've sold their souls, quote unquote, to whatever this devil is, to Black Iron Mountain. So now they just do the bidding of delivering materialistic objects to the world. It's a really like thin connection. And honestly, I think this book, frankly, it's new enough that I think we could have avoided the UPS reference and maybe made an Amazon reference.
Yeah, I mean, except that, like,
Grady Hendrix is very afraid of getting sued.
I mean, is it that? Also, I mean, let's be honest. If you're going to make an Amazon reference, Bezos isn't going to put it up on fucking Audible. But also,
is that... Do you think that's why? Do you think that's why it's free right now? Is it part of the Black Iron Mountain conspiracy? Like, dude, that Bezos, I don't know, is like,
there's,
they hate UPS. I'm going to put this book for free.
The stakes, I don't know. I don't find the idea of, because then, okay, if Chris sold her soul, then why is she able to then pick up her guitar and play it and start to like gain, like, does your soul grow back or is it a concept? But they're physically eating a thing from these people's bodies. There's a thing there.
Maybe when Chris encounters the girl with the sad dog and she says, girls with guitars don't need to offer apologies. And that's like her little like stinger line. Maybe that's when she grows her soul back.
Then where's
I don't know.
Then where's the stakes? Like, where's the consequences?
There are no consequences in this fucking book.
No, you're right. There aren't. And that's one of my huge problems with this book.
There are none. Other than nothing. There's no consequences.
You know who ends up with consequences at the end? It's Terry. He kind of can't open his mouth as far as he used to be able to. That's the big body horror at the end of it. That's literally even what they say at the end. Is he's like, he couldn't open his mouth as far as he used to be able to. Oh my God,
every song I'm trying to play is someone else's song, which I guess means that his soul is gone. I think I'm supposed to have taken a lot of things from this, but I didn't. I was expecting a nice, like, cosmic horror. And there's only two sequences of horror in this to me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
When Scotty offs himself and the attack on JD, I think there's three. I think there's three sequences of horror.
Which ones to you?
The attack, the sequence with Scotty's suicide and the murder, the horde attack on JD and Chris in the car, and
thank God that happened.
The final concert.
Yes.
And what's the other girl that ends up Madeline?
Melanie.
Melanie.
Yes.
And that sequence, I think Hendrix is trying to make a statement. Like, that was actually the most, it didn't bother me in its weird, like, hey, gross, rapey sexuality thing, simply because I feel like Hendrix is making a statement just on, like, a thing that we all know as a society, which is don't, if you're a young woman, don't hang out with a group of like five strange guys that you don't know because guys suck.
Are the fucking worst.
Guys are the worst.
Yeah.
But also that was this supposed to be a culmination of Terry's concert in which, he's selling this entire audience's soul. And so these people are becoming like evil,
yes,
and that he's like rising up this group of evil people who will become
I don't think Terry even has that
soldiers
far of a thought.
No,
Terry's
it doesn't even matter. Doesn't even matter because at the end of the book, it's not like there's an actual showdown. Chris just goes, "Hey, guess what? I've hated you for years. We'll just go on band on. We'll play a show together.
Hey, I'm here on stage right now."
You've all been looking for me. I'm a suspected murderer, but we'll play a show together.
Also, literally the whole world is looking out for
surprise.
Me.
Surprise.
Also, I left here some dude's corpse in a car. Mm-hmm.
But that's fine, because his ghost is going to go back and play for his drums for his mom sometimes.
Yeah, that part
the
was weird.
The ending of the book was so...
It was a cop-out.
It was not... Yeah, it was a cop-out, and it was a muddled mess.
It felt like Grady Hendrix had all these ideas, and then he gets to big concert and is like, fuck, I think all my ideas are shot. I got nothing else. Like the gas tank is empty. There ain't no... There is... This book, there is no cosmic horror to me. Mm-mm. None. There are like insinuations, but it's also these subtle suggestions of like, hey, conspiracy theorists are seeing the truth, but they're also like batshit crazy, so who can trust them? I think there are some suggestions that, like, you know, we're all just worms digging through the dirt day by day, which is a statement on materialism that I don't fucking need anymore, because it's not a statement, it's a truth.
Yeah.
I don't need a book to tell me how I'm supposed to feel like shit because my day-to-day life is literally fucking useless. I don't need a book to tell me that anymore.
Right.
Like, Chris gets the end. She plays the concert. She's, like, winking at Terry because she's come on stage. They play Troglodyte. The music that's supposed to be Viking magic that will, like, fix the world. But because none of the rules are explained, I guess they just play a kick-ass show and it's remembered forever.
Metal will live forever. Don't worry about it. That is what this book comes down to at the end. Is
metal's fine.
Metal will be there forever. Don't worry about it.
Got a heartbeat? Metal will take care of you.
Do you like metal? If you got metal in your soul, it'll be fine. Don't worry. Look, if you sell out, you're a real sellout.
But if you sell out, like, that's, I think, where this reminds me that Grady Hendrix sort of played with the canvas that metal allowed him, but didn't really get metal either. Mm-hmm. Because to me, metal would have been Chris gets on stage at the end, takes her fucking guitar and just crushes Terry's face in, because it's suggested the entire time that she's like, this is going to be my last ride. I'm going to get there.
And she says over and over again, we're not killing anybody. I'm not going to kill anybody.
Oh,
but that's what would be so metal at the end of this book, is for her to get up there and to become this creature that she was earlier in her life, in her career, where she wasn't afraid of anything, where she would kick the shit out of somebody if they fucked with her, you know, like that she would fucking steal the cash box from a bar if they screwed her over. Instead, she gets on stage and she's like, hey, we're playing a show together, even though I don't like you.
Let me rewrite the end of We Sold Our Souls the way I want to see it.
Oh, my God. Yeah, okay. You do it. Do it.
Okay.
Do it.
Chris, at one point in the book, she takes her old guitar and she like defends herself with her old guitar earlier on when she's escaping like the weird MK Ultra facility. I wanted to see her get on stage and for Terry to look, the blind king to look at her and like have this moment of shock. And she just takes her guitar and beats him into this bloody fucking pulp. Look at your adorable cat. Beats him into this bloody fucking pulp in front of 440,000 people. And instead of her ever feeling, it's like a Pyrrhic arc. She stands there covered in blood. And she looks out at these 440,000 people and realizes they all fucking explode. Like, with, like, they're like, holy shit, that was metal as fuck. Yeah. Because she realizes that her doing that was what Black Iron Mountain wanted. And she just sold all their souls to become famous.
Yeah, no, you gotta
there
have.
There you go.
Yeah, no, there should be.
Great, I fixed your book, buddy.
Okay, see, and that's the thing is, I'm seeing, like, she gets on stage. I'm gonna take what you're doing and I'm gonna just kind of adjust it a little
bit. Go for it. Go for it.
She gets in my version of the book. I see it. She gets on stage. You know, fucking Terry. She looks at Terry and she's like, "Oh, hey." She does everything the same. Where she's like, "We're gonna play Troglodyte because you all wanted to fucking hear this song and it's a legend." And so they start playing it, and she and Terry are doing that thing where, like, you know, singer, you know, the singer and the guitarist get real close together and they're like playing with each other, you know, like back to back and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And they're up in like the walkway, the like runway in front of the crowd. But then she fucking turns around and just gives him a boot right in the chest and he falls into the crowd and the crowd just fucking tears him apart.
Rips him apart.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just like rips him apart. Because they realize that she's like the true queen of Black Iron Mountain.
Yeah, exactly. And it's still that dark ending. Where, because you can't, I'm trying to think, it's like, is it Conan? What's the, no.
Chronicles of Riddick. Yep.
Exactly.
Where he wins, he sits on the throne, but he's destroyed everything else in the process.
Yeah, exactly. What is it? You eat what you take.
Yeah. You eat what you kill or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. That she, you know, and that's exactly it. And so she goes on to be like
the new Terry. Yes. Because I don't think it's metal to end the book the way metal is not to me. If we look at the history of metal, it is a violent and self-destructive, consuming art form.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that with any kind of anger or like blame. That's the way metal's always been. Self-destruction has sort of been part of it.
That's
rock and roll. So I love the idea of Chris getting to the end and fucking like taking over because she's got nothing left.
Yeah.
She got nothing left. Her life is behind her. The only way that she can sort of escape all this crap is to become the new figurehead of Coffin. And
oh, and the line is you keep what you kill.
Thank you. And that would have and I would even love it at that moment for like the cosmic horrorness to appear even more heavily for her to see what Black Iron Mountain actually is, that maybe it's been this presence that's been driving Terry to do this, because all I know of the cosmic horror in this, these little maggot worms that eat people's souls. And that's it. there's no true evil presence at work here. It's just human greed. But that doesn't feel like enough to me because there are so many other things potentially at work that never get explained.
And it'd be so fun to realize that because Terry is such a chump to the whole time, for her to make the realization that Terry was always a tool and that he was the tool that was intended to bring her up to the level that she's at. That you know, it was never about him.
You know why? He's the blind king, baby. He doesn't see the whole play out.
Booyah. Just right there. Fix your book for you, Grady. Thanks, Grady. A lot. You can find me at www.thequarantinebookclub.com. I'll start a Fiverr. We'll fix books on Fiverr.
I don't think the book is terrible. It does feel there is the moment when she meets JD and JD is talking about like, I've made a Viking oath to defend you, which is the dumbest shit. Like anybody out there who actually loves metal and talks about Viking oaths, get a boot because you're not, that's nobody does that. No one who is into metal is like, I've taken Odin's oath to protect you. No, you're just some dude who just sits in his basement and smokes a lot of weed. You took no oath. You don't know any magic.
I actually feel a little bit bad as far as the conversations that are had in this book about mental illness. I think mental illness is used as a tool. Again, I don't think that it's done terribly disrespectfully. I just think that it's sort of a cop-out where – and I think the intent is more not to – it's not to like bust on mental illness or say like, oh, mental illness is bad. It's to show that Chris is in a situation. She's in a situation where she doesn't know how to cope with it because everybody's afraid of that situation.
Sure.
We're afraid of getting into a situation where someone that we know perhaps needs chemical help in the form of medication stops their medication. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure we all have a family member who suffers. Some of us on our own suffer, you know, and that idea of taking that medication away from someone that sort of like makes them crack is, I think, a little unfair and a little convenient.
Yeah.
When you can find a different, better way to put them in a situation. And the conspiracy theorist turning into being mentally unstable is a reoccurring theme in this book. It happens with Scotty Rocket. It happens with
JD.
Mm-hmm. Chris is locked into a facility and that excuse is used on her. Like, it's a reoccurring theme in the book of mental illness and conspiracy theories going hand in hand.
Yes. Yes. And not to mention twice, it's mentioned in the book too, that two different characters, Scotty Rocket and JD, abandon their medications because, I believe with Scotty, it's mentioned in the, I believe it is mentioned that he hasn't been taking his meds and that we see JD drop his meds and crush them on the ground.
Yeah.
As though these are also parts of the conspiracy of Black Iron Mountain, but really they're just tools for helping keep people balanced out. And I think you're right. I think there's something to be said about clarity is not obtained through clarity is not obtained through avoiding medication.
Yeah.
Clarity is brought forward because they've finally been able to get something to help them balance out these chemicals that are all fucked in their heads, like me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. There is an intent. And same, me too. You know, dealing with as a person who is on anxiety medication and has felt and seen an exceptional improvement in my quality of life in taking medication. And I get it. My anxiety is nothing compared to some of the difficulties that other people deal with and struggle with on a daily basis. And those people who do struggle deserve empathy, not to be vilified.
Right.
And I don't think that Grady is vilifying people. I think he's just using it as kind of like an excuse to forward the plot in the book a little bit.
They become these tools of convenience where, and I like to differentiate between what I call literary madness and actual mental health issues.
Yeah.
Because there is a literary madness. We look at Poe, for example, it's just this presumption that this is how madness works. It is the raving, quote unquote, raving lunatic hiding people. You know, there is the quiet one locking people up behind mortared walls. There is the raving one who chops people up and puts them into the floorboards. Right. This puts that literary madness to work because Scotty Rocket, no one trusts him. No one believes what he's saying. Oh, he's just the nuts guy who blew himself out on drugs through his career. And the same with JD. JD's stuck in his mom, his grandmother's basement. Nobody likes JD. And I don't really think it is a necessarily respectful way to explore those things. Mm-hmm. These characters can be heroes too. Scotty is a bit of a hero. He sort of opens Chris's eyes to all this.
Mm-hmm. And he saves her life. Like, he is the person who has the agency at the beginning of the book to step outside of what he's conditioned to do. And in taking his own life, saves Chris's life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even though he dooms his own family in doing so.
But that's also where these rules, I think, come a little apart, is because he's listening. What is the song called? Stay in Line or something like that, that he hears on his phone?
Stand tall.
I don't know.
Stand in the place where you were. Is it that R.E.M. song?
It is. Their R.E.M. song. Thank you. I knew they got that from somewhere.
Thank you, Michael.
Every time people,
we all love you and appreciate you.
I don't care. hear this song, it's like a subliminal message that makes them do work for Terry slash the Blind King. And
is
we
it
see
dirt work.
Dirt work. We see it with Scotty. We see it with like the mob that attacks JD and rips him apart, like actively rips him apart. Like Everybody Hates Chris from The Walking Dead. Just like grabs his cheeks. There is a description, I gotta say, that fucking kicked my ass.
Yeah, JD's death is ridiculous.
Man. JD's death is so brutal. He talks about people reaching into his mouth and grabbing the root of his tongue and just ripping it. I was like, fuck, no.
Fish hooking him. They fish hook him until his cheek tears. And she talks about the skin coming apart and like...
It fucked me up, dude.
Yeah, no, there's some good descriptive... body horror in like the idea of violence in the book that is not, and is also not, it's
not gratuitous.
No, it's fascinatingly scary in a way that doesn't, that makes you think about the horrific fragility of the human body. And I think that's more what he's sort of going for, which I think is more effective than just like stabby, stabby, shoot,
yes.
shoot. That, yeah, I mean, anyone that's, you know, we're not talking, even though this is, they're overwhelmed by a mob, we're talking about what, like, the ability of, like, enough people that can fit their arms through a car door do to someone. Like, that's not a lot of people when you think about how bodies work. And so, but yet at the same time, we all know somewhere deep down inside, this could happen to any of us, like, physically, it's possible.
Yeah. I think Grady Hendrix's writing is really sharp. I will say that personally, I think the beginning half of the book really shows it off. And I feel it is that moment where she meets JD that I feel is convenience, and the rest of the book sort of feels phoned in to me. That all of a sudden also, I feel like his prose loses a pop. It loses a certain amount of soul. Like it's been sold. And maybe that's intentional, but the beginning fascinated me. I loved sitting there thinking to myself, not only is this writing absolutely gorgeous and the dialogue is great, but also there's this world of conspiracies that I'm really interested in unraveling, but really there's nothing to unravel.
Yeah, that's the problem. He's got this great... it's the opposite of judging a book by its cover, I guess. Like, it's got this great wrapping... that it's sort of hollow inside. It's like a Cadbury cream egg, except the cream, somebody sucked the cream out earlier. You know, it's enjoyable to listen to, as in the sort of the poetic, I'm using an oxymoron here, the poeticness of the prose. His descriptiveness and storytelling is accessible. It's nice. It's nice to listen to the words make sense in a way that flows well. But at the end of the day, the content doesn't lead anywhere. I wanted to see a little bit more use out of the secondary character. God damn it! What did you say?
Melanie.
Her name was?
Melanie. Melanie's introduced earlier as like there's her storyline and Chris's storyline. Mm-hmm. And I actually, to be fair, I think one of two things could have happened. I either want to see Melanie more heavily developed and as an essential part of this troglodyte mythology, or just fucking cut her out. I don't need it.
Yeah,
no, it's some exactly wasted it. Words.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's, it's like she's filler. And the problem is she's filler that you get invested in that could be much more useful in the telling of the story. And she's your sort of kicker at the end of the book, where she is inspired by Chris to learn how to play guitar and become, you know, like that's, I'm going to be the new, you know, the new guitar lady at the end of the book. But all of her other stuff, getting her there, she's already kind of learned all those lessons that Chris learned in her career. So what is this journey for her other than to maybe in fact the opposite and say, yo, all this shit really sucks. Maybe I just need to live a life that's sensible and stop, like, don't follow a pipe dream.
Well, and that's also something that I feel is Melanie is bound. If we look at the patterns that are established by a life of excess and metal, and I'm not just talking about in this book, but like in general, leaning too hard into that lifestyle is, again, self-destructive. So like when Melanie picks up the guitar at the end, it's like, I'm going to pluck through some songs that I heard coming from Chris Pulaski's amp. But it's like there's actually lessons that need to be imparted there, too. The way in a Faustian story of we sold our souls, there is a reckoning to be had. If we look at the literary rules, there is this travel to the underworld, whether it is allegorical or metaphorical or otherwise, and the lifting up from that. In Chris's case, there is a lifting up out from the underworld, but it's this really thin and superficial one. And then she just literally vanishes. Nobody knows what the fuck happens to Chris. But I think what needed to happen is for there to be a reckoning, a Faustian reckoning of, holy shit, not only did Terry sell our souls, but you know what? I sort of fucking sold mine as well in trying to take him down. And I need to then guide this younger girl on a path of self-discovery and true authentic creation, as opposed to the dirt work approach, which was let's do a bunch of partying and do a bunch of drugs and get all fucked up. And then all of a sudden we're fucking crashing our car because there's weird soul worms.
Yeah. I mean, except for the fact that, I mean, then you're looking at a non metal ending for the book.
There's, you know, so the ending to me isn't even metal anyway. It's like, no, Tenacious D song.
It's not, but that's what I'm saying. It is very, you know, you get this nice little like, wrapping everything up in a bow at the end of the story. You get the sound tech who was always like this weird good luck fate charm that she kept showing up at every show that Chris had when she was in dirt work, and at the end ends up being the sound tech for Terry's big concert and saving Melanie's life from this crowd of
ravenous, out of control, ravenous assholes. Ravenous,
yeah. And also that idea of there is a camaraderie in the world of some of the moments like that are the most believable moments to me in the book, where there's a level of camaraderie in the world of metal and of hard rock and like all those different subgenres, punk, where we don't leave anyone behind,
right?
And nobody at the show is your enemy unless they fucking come out and like are a dick and try to punch you, you know, something like that. That like if somebody falls down in the pit,
everybody
picks
them up.
Stomp them. Everybody picks them up.
Yep.
That was that moment in the book where she pulls her out of this situation, but also at the same time, from the outside seeing the situation happening, more than anything, that like that feeling, the feeling to me is that she is, as a person of agency at this point in the book, and a good luck charm sort of would go, okay, well, all of this is happening, maybe I need to stop the show and cut the sound, you know, like, because I'm responsible for everyone here, because I'm the metal patriarch and these are my kids, you know, that's what would happen in the real world of metal, I think, as far as, you know, in our exposure to those things.
Yes, it's always absolutely about having
a good time.
Absolutely.
Even if it's destructive in some manner.
Yeah. Yeah. Even if having a good time means taking a guitar and smashing across somebody's face.
That would have been a fun end of the book, man.
The way that Chris should have taken for Terry. I actually saw a review that I really like, and I'd like to read this review because I think it sums up to me my problems with the book.
Cool.
It's really well done, and I just literally am sitting here thinking to myself, well, I want to put somebody else's words on display. This is actually a Goodreads review from James Oxier. He says, I love the heart that went into this, but the whole thing feels so half-baked, or maybe first drafty. I loved the first half all the way until after an escape scene. After that, it lost me. The plot is too allegorical for its own good. The climax is way too feel-good and family-friendly considering the dark horror elements that were in play in the rest of the novel. The universe and its mythology are frustratingly underdeveloped. The social commentary jumbled into it never comes together. It never locks down a clear tone, featuring genuinely disturbing moments of horror mixed with goofy humor and schmaltzy sentimentality. At its worst, its message of following your dreams and fighting the man comes off as downright preachy. I feel awful for ragging on it, though. This is a love letter to rock and roll through and through, and if anything translates crystal clear, it's that. Like I said, I adore the first half, and the second half does have some awesome moments of catharsis. I liked Chris's character, and it was great seeing where she wound up. And I agree, I like Chris a lot. In fact, I didn't fucking care about Melody. Like, I just wanted Chris moments. Maybe I'm just battle hardened after the Pitch Perfect metal storytelling in Mandy. Great movie. But this didn't resonate with me on any really deep level. I love the ingredients, not so much the final dish. And that right there is this book in a nutshell to me. I love the idea. I think it's cool. It seems to fizzle out. Every thread of possibility never sparks into a fire. It just fizzles out.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's a great description of it. I actually found a really good review, too, that I'd like to read.
Go for it.
Okay. So this review is by Dix69.
Oh, okay. And great.
It says, butts, butts, farts, butts, butts, farts, butts, farts, dicks, dicks, dicks.
Is that, what is it? What is it really that Dix is talking about here? Can we break down Dix69's his thoughts on this?
Dix69, I think, really gets to the heart of the matter by explaining that Grady Hendrix relies too much on themes and the concepts that he wants to tell about, but there's no content to the story.
There's not really substance behind what's happening. It's a lot of motifs that have been thrown out there in this attempt to be allegorical. And while he could certainly use metal as a jumping off point for these ideas, as a genre of music that is steeped so oftentimes in created mythologies, but really it falls immensely short.
Yeah, there's not, if you will, a lot of soul to it. It's a very empty shell. And in trying to compile several genres of storytelling together with both, you know, like the buddy, like road trip story, as well as the cosmic horror, at the end of the day, the dish, as your other reviewer said, the dish served is sort of just cold and clammy and doesn't... Butts.
Butts. I would say, okay, if you want to read this, if I'm going to give a final thought, if you want to read the book, you're not going to have a terrible time.
No.
I think it will be disappointing in its in what it comes to, because I was waiting the entire time for some stuff to be pulled together, and it never really got there. But also, maybe watch the Tenacious D movie, watch Onward. You're set. You've got it. You've literally got everything without the weird horror, body horror stuff in it, which you're fine.
You want to read a book? Read Queen of the Damned. It's a book that culminates in a concert that has a lot of separate stories that come together. And I'm serious. Like, I know it sounds like silly, but as a person 20 years later, I might not like it as much. Maybe I'll go back and read it one day. Who knows? But if you want a book about a concert that's has a point to it, read that book. Also, let me tell you a thing. Before we wrap it up, I got to talk about hatred. And I got to talk about a thing in this book that I actually legitimately hated.
Oh, I'm interested. I'm interested now, because I don't think there's anything that I personally was hate about.
there's some pet peeves, and there's some stuff in books that I fucking hate. One thing is,
I'm about to put a book out. I hope that none of this stuff is in there.
Yeah, I hope so too, because I'm not going to fucking read it if it is.
Okay.
So this is your fucking warning. You put this shit in your book, I'll hate your book.
Okay.
you want to talk about music in your book. You make up music. You make up songs, first of all.
I know where this is going.
Make sure, A, the fucking songs don't sound dumb.
God, they do sort of sound dumb, right?
Okay, troglodyte is, and all of that shit, first of all,
you know, reminds me of Iron Maiden. Who's it? Lenny or whatever. It's like the who's the skeleton?
No. Oh, you're talking about Eddie.
Eddie.
See, yeah. No, that's, I mean that. That's kind of what they're doing. I keep thinking about the fucking time machine and the Morlocks. You know, but like, so the whole concept of troglodyte, which is never really fleshed out very well, fucking. Okay, I throw it out the window. Also, don't fucking make up songs that nobody knows the fucking words to because they're not real songs. And then the entire climax of your fucking story is just you reciting the words to made up fucking songs. I don't like songs in books. Don't recite fucking lyrics. So I love Lord of the Rings. I love, you know, Tolkien, The Hobbit. But you know what I don't like about those fucking books?
Songs.
I don't like when the fucking dwarves sing their fucking songs. When people do make up. Don't make up songs in books. It's awkward. It embarrasses me. I literally am embarrassed when I'm reading these passages, and I'm hoping that somebody's not looking over my shoulder going, holy shit, Bob. What's this fucking dumbass shit that you're reading?
What's this
story about the deep mountain bullshit? That's what it feels like. It feels like fucking like he's trying to be Lord of the Rings here.
It's Zeppelin. I like that you say you get embarrassed by them, which is not what I expect. It's like when I'm embarrassed
for you as an author and me as the reader at the same fucking time. It's like watching a television show that you watched as a kid. And then you come back to it years later and you're like, I'm going to watch this because this is fun. But you fucking pray that nobody walks in the room while you're watching it because you'll be embarrassed as shit.
Yeah, you don't want your parents to know that Morph is a real, like, creeper in X-Men, right? Like, good. I'm glad Morph's dead. That guy deserved it.
And, like, yeah, don't. Fucking songs are dumb in books. Don't recite lyrics.
Tell Cyclops I made him a convertible. What else do you hate? Was it just that?
I mean, that's the biggest part about it that I fucking hated. Just stop singing songs in your books. Don't do it.
Also,
if it's a made-up song, if it's a real song, okay, you know what I'm gonna challenge you to, bro. Since you did it, you've done it in the past, maybe you need to take one of these troglodyte songs and make a song
thought
out
about
of
it. Thought about it, was going to do it before this episode, just didn't have the gumption. So you know what? I am going to aim to do that because I'm going to turn it into a metal song. He talks in here. The other thing about this, though, that I have to say as a metal fan, too, is that he mentions a lot of like metal stuff that's like the wink, wink, I know metal. Like, of course, he's got to talk about blast beats. But he talks about the falsetto singing, the wah! Like that shit. Mm-hmm. But then he talks about what he calls the cookie monster growl.
Yeah.
Which in no place in metal is anything called the cookie monster growl. I remember hearing cricket vocals are a thing. Look up cricket vocals. They're a real ass thing and they're actually fucking phenomenal. There's the growl and the scream, right? We don't talk about cookie monster vocals. It's just cricket vocals.
Fucking always hated doing the Cookie Monster vocals because it hurt my voice.
What's the Cookie Monster vocals? We're gonna do the Cookie Monster vocals right here, right now.
C is for cookie. That's good enough for me. C is for cookie. Troglodyte will be cookie.
That's it. That's metal. Guys, I metaled.
We did a metal song for you. Congratulations, Quarantine Metal Club.
Yeah, I mean, now I'm going to go back through. The volume spikes on that.
Just oh, no. I don't even want to look at. Oh, my God. It's so bad going through and actually looking at that. Oh, painful.
I mean, it's fine.
I'm sorry to everyone listening to this episode. I apologize. Right now, we here at the Quarantine Book Club want you to know that we apologize if we made your ears bleed during the last sequence, but wait a minute. No, we don't. You know why? Because it's fucking metal.
You know what? By next episode, I'll have a song recorded for you.
Fucking sweet. We can play it for Bond.
And we're going to play it for Bond. And then you know what? I might send that shit to Grady Hendrix.
Nice. And then be like, "Here, dear Grady, please listen to our episode of the podcast where we said your book wasn't great."
You mentioned you hated that, and I'm going to end on this thought, which is that I appreciate Grady Hendrix trying to yet again smash some like new ideas, some interesting ideas together. I really liked his My Best Friend's Exorcism. I thought it was a cool book. I like Grady Hendrix's stuff for what I've read of it. Horror Store, I didn't complete, but I'm hoping to get back to it at some point because I actually think I could have a better appreciation of it now. However, if you want something that is really going to play with metal mythology, that knows its shit, and that does so in a tongue-in-cheek but also surprisingly emotional way, just fucking watch Metalocalypse. Oh. Metalocalypse is way more cosmic horror than this. And it's also got Mark Hamill in it, so that's great. True, but like true. It also the guy who made it knows metal like the back of his fucking hand, like loves metal. And so when he's making fun of metal, it's authentic. When he's being honest about how cool metal is, it's authentic. So just fucking watch Metalocalypse and School of Rock. Watch School of Rock too. You know, just do it. Just do it.
Just fucking do it.
So what do we got going on next week, ma'am?
Well, next week we are being joined by
2 weeks.
God, why do we keep saying next? We always say next week.
Fuck, because not next week.
God, might as well give up.
Why?
Just give up on the podcast.
Why do you need a podcast anymore? Who needs a podcast, right? Fuck it. You know what am I going to do? Just throw it in the trash. I don't need this crap.
Done.
Fuck it.
Done.
You know what?
Forget about it.
Take
quarantine quit club.
Take it and just throw it in the dumpster. Light it on fire.
I'll throw it down Black Mountain Iron.
Black Country, you know what's more mythologically cool is David Bowie.
Oh, I know. Well,
Bowie just God.
You want to talk about a concept album, motherfucker, right there? David Bowie.
And
just
Cyberpunk.
Go listen to some David. Oh, I mean, that's the fucking greatest album of all time. Cyberpunk by Billy Idol, the album that ruined his career, is the greatest concept album of all time. I will fight you on it. I know I keep saying that all episode. Like, I'm going to fight people about it. But that's an actual fight that I'll have with somebody. Like, you try to tell me that Billy Idol Cyberpunk isn't a good album, we'll fight.
Here's the other thing, too, is that you watch the Shock to the System video. It's not only the most cyberpunk shit out there, it avoids, I think we've talked about this in the past, it avoids all these problematic tropes of cyberpunk shit.
Yeah, there's even a making of video for it that you can watch where Billy Idol's just like, I'm gonna tell you about all this stuff that I did while he was fucking laid up from a motorcycle accident that he thought he was gonna get brain damage from.
I wonder if our friend Tommy Stapes has ever met Billy Idol, because aren't there like four people in the UK?
I mean, yeah, I mean,
and sheep.
They're both English, right?
Yeah, they've got to have met before.
Clearly, they're like best buds.
Yeah, they've got to have met before.
Just like next week, we'll be joined by another friend from Canada, Chris Bond, who is one of the hosts of the We Like Theme Parks podcast, where he's a guy who's really important in our life. He's one of the creators of Evil Dead the Musical.
Hey, Bond, love you.
I love you, Bond. Love you. But he's also a huge fan of Disney's Tron, just like I am. And so next week,
2 weeks.
We're going to have 2 weeks.
God, next stop episode. It. God. Fuck. Just end the podcast right now. Just, you know what? Pull a Scotty Rocket. No one cares.
Mm-hmm. I don't care.
Fuck.
I don't
Black care. Iron Black Fuck. Iron Mountain's going to hit your ass.
Anyway, what I was saying was we're going to read the 1982 novelization of Disney's Tron by Brian Daley. Now, this is a book that's out of print. I don't think there's an audio version of it. I literally bought copies on eBay and sent one to Canada so that Chris could read it. And so if you want to find it, you're going to have to find it on like thriftbooks.com or
that's a site we know eBay. Is very, very reliable.
Mm-hmm. Go to eBay, though. They're just still there for an inexpensive amount if you want to check it out. But you don't have a lot of time. That's the thing.
Let me give you guys a hot podcast pro tip. Mm-hmm. Don't read this book. You know why?
Don't fucking read
because
it.
Because Bob's going to, next week, Bob is going to shit his pants with anger at this book. Tron is like his favorite fucking thing in the world. Bob is, you're going to hear him lift off the seat as his pants just are riddled with shit, as they're just shellacked with anger poop. He is just going to rise into the air.
And I just, piss is just going to run all down my leg, and I'll look at Bond just across the internet, and I'll just say, I'm sorry, I pissed my pants. And that'll be the end of our career.
We have a friend of the podcast who goes by the name of The Art of Dying Softly, and Bob is going to be the art of shitting his pants loudly and dying. So there. Like, you're trying to like scope in on people's, like, you know, like their shtick. And here's the thing. Mm-hmm. I want you to get fucking angry next week. If this book doesn't piss you off, then it hasn't done a good job. I want to hear the angriest Bob I've ever heard next
what
week.
What if it's
good, gonna suck.
Like, what if it's a really good novelization? Suck. I mean, we are going back to old form here, and that's taking a novelization of some shit that we know. Like, first of all, let's face it, Tron as a groundbreaking film. I'll say it right here on the podcast, it's my favorite film in the world. It's not the greatest film out there. It's a remake of The Wizard of Oz, basically.
You know what?
And so it's not like it's fucking Citizen Kane. Not that I heard that you try to watch Citizen Kane and turn that shit off.
It's bad. It's bad. It's not good. If you're out there and you're like, Citizen Kane's a great movie, fucking watch some new movies. Speaking of which, watched a great movie. Really liked it.
Okay.
I watched Knives Out.
I heard that. It seemed like it was fun, right?
You know who made it and wrote it?
Me.
Rian Johnson, Rian Johnson, the guy who did The Last Jedi.
Oh, really?
He needs to stick with this. He needs to stick with this stuff. Like, it's it's cleverly written, and it's not what I expected it to be.
He wanted to get all clever with the Star Wars, and instead he fucking shit his pants.
Well, you know what?
So
don't get mad about fucking Last Jedi anymore. You want to know why?
Because they're just going to make more of them anyway.
Oh. Should be told. Who fucking cares?
I don't care. It's just fucking consumerism. Whatever.
Whatever, man. Metal. Just be metal. Black Iron Mountain. We sold our souls.
If you want to find us out there, first of all, you can check out our website. It's www.thequarantinebookclub.com. If you don't use the, you're going to sell your soul to Black Iron Mountain. You can check us out on Twitter. We are at the QBC Podcast. You can check us out on TikTok. We are also at the QBC Podcast. You can check us out on Instagram at the Quarantine Book Club Podcast. You can check us out on Facebook at the Quarantine Book Club, I'm pretty sure. You can find me on Twitter at SpaceFunkyBOB. You can find Rance on Twitter at Violence Obscene. Rance's book is coming out by the time our next episode. Why don't you tell us about that real quick?
Yeah, buddy. I was going to say, so July 2nd, my debut novel, His Ragged Company, is going to be out ready. It is available for pre-order on Amazon as an ebook, but also physical copies available on July 2nd. My plan is also to have it up at Barnes & Noble and a few other retailers online, too. And you know what? It looks fucking banging. Get a copy of it and then send me an email and tell me how much of a piece of shit it is. But review it honestly. Here's the thing, man. I got some feelings. Let me talk about reviews for a second. I believe in reviews that are honest, okay? Okay. I reserve 1s and 2 stars for trauma avoidance. That's what I like. Like, I won't ever rate something under 3 stars, like, honestly, on a website, unless I'm literally telling people, like, avoid this fucking book because it's racist or it's homophobic or whatever.
Okay, and that's why you got upset when I said that this book that we read this week was 2.5 stars.
Maybe,
gotcha.
Maybe.
So what you're saying is it should be like a 3.5.
I would give this book a 3. I'd give it a 3.
Okay, cool. Okay. Understood.
It's fine. It's a book I read. Right. I didn't put it down. It wasn't something that I would tell people, like, avoid it because it's problematic. There's not really any of that. Anyway, if you get my book, review it honestly. I'm not going to be fucking hurt if you hate it or if you don't like it or if you stopped reading. Just be honest about it. That's what I'm going to say. And, like, there's people out there who would say that and give you a wink, wink, wink. Be honest with it. I've gotten fucking death threats for shit that I've written before, for real. So, you know what? Yeah. Some low ratings. they're authentic to me. Be authentic to you as a reader.
Yeah, it helps you. It helps you decide what you like and didn't like about writing this book. What your audience likes and doesn't like about the book.
Absolutely,
that's fine. Also, look, I'm going to tell you, fucking read the book. Just fucking get it. Go get this fucking book because you know what? It's got cowboys going pew 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 with guns. People cutting body parts off. There's fucking people made of metal in it. There's fucking zombies in it. There's magic in it. Fuck.
There's more cosmic horror than we sold our souls. So.
Fucking get in there and do the thing.
All right. I'm out this bitch.
All right. I guess I am too. So again, join us next episode. I'm Bob.
I'm Rance.
And this has been the Quarantine Book Club. Stay safe, be kind to each other, and do the work.